Hi everybody, welcome to episode 35 of the Alexis L podcast, and we have a particularly special guest today, Bassem Youssef, really. And I try and disguise my lack of research by saying, Bassem, tell me your story.
Where to begin? I was a heart surgeon in Egypt. That's the short version. I was a heart surgeon in Egypt, turned into a political satirist, had my own show in Egypt, got kicked out, escaped, and now in the United States trying to reinvent myself in a different form of comedy, in a different language for a different audience. And now I'm in Europe doing my European tour and an English stand-up, which is also another challenge since, you know, outside of England, English might not be the first language where people would gravitate to the English stand-up comedy. So that's the that's the short version of the story.
Right. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. Where are you? So this is your first European tour?
Yeah, I just landed in Paris. I'm having my first show in Paris after tomorrow, and then I will go to do 10 European cities in 20 days, including 3 cities in the UK, London, Manchester, and Birmingham. And Talal is going to be opening for a couple of shows. I'm very excited to work with Talal, actually, so it's going to be fun in London.
Yeah.
He's a good boy. I've taught him everything he knows. You're playing the South Bank Centre in London?
Yes, which is
a lovely room.
It's a huge theatre, and I'm very excited to be playing it there. And it's kind of like it's
that's been on the 9th of March.
Yeah, 9th of March in London, 10th of March in Birmingham, and 11th in Manchester, and 12th in Copenhagen. So it's kind of like it's a very great tour. It's going to be interesting, and I have faith that this will be like a good tour where I know more about myself, more about the communities here, and more about the Arab diaspora that will come to the show, and hopefully a lot of non-Arabs will come to the show too.
Yeah, I mean, who's
be global for everyone. You don't have to be from the enjoy.
Yeah, so you will be performing in English.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Everywhere, but your audience will largely be Arab. You think from the Arab diaspora?
Yeah, I have been performing in English in America. I've been having like a big American tour, and this is the first time I do it outside of North America. I did America. I did a lot of Canadian cities. Mm-hmm. And this is my European tour. So, okay, finger crossed.
Fantastic. So, go back in time, really. You were, presumably, you were a heart surgeon during the Mubarak era in Egypt, is that right?
Yes, under Mubarak, I was a heart surgeon, and I was actually prepared to leave Egypt to start a fellowship in America. And then the Arab Spring happened, and all my life I followed Jon Stewart. I loved his brand of comedy, his brand of political satire. So I did like a few like YouTube videos satirizing the state-run media that was spreading all kinds of lies and misinformation. And when the videos went viral, and before I know it, I'm signing my first television deal. And now I'm hosting a television deal, a political satire show that is satirizing the political events in Egypt. People love the show. Government, not so much.
And that's when I first became aware of you, actually.
Yes.
This is like, I don't know, 10 or more years ago?
I started in 2011.
2011, yeah. And my mom actually introduced me to you because she's like, Talal, you like the comedy, right? You should see this man. He's incredible. And she was like so blown away because you don't see that in the Middle East. You know,
that's what I was going to say. I mean, was there any kind of tradition of satire in the Middle East? It's obviously the risks that it's not without danger, is it?
Satire and comedy has been extreme. It was always been there in Egypt, especially Egypt. They've been very strong. There's a strong tradition. The satirists and the comedians in Egypt has been amazing. But the thing is, as far as political satire, that was not a brand that was there. It has, and there has been some satire, a little bit political, but it's always been sanctioned and accepted and allowed by the government. The whole idea of like the free-falling satire that we can say anything we want, we can take punches to the government or the authority or the president was not even allowed. You always had some sort of a ceiling where you cannot go past. So when the Arab Spring happened, there was a kind of like a fluid stage of ideas and comedy. And for the first time, we were allowed to talk about anything we want. And so this is why the show thrived, because there was an atmosphere of freedom that allowed people to do so. But however, it was not like the Western world, which has been, the art of satire has been established. We had to carve our space into that field. And that caught me into trouble. So under the Islamist, I was interrogated. There was a warrant for my arrest, and I had to actually be in an interrogation for 6 hours in a room to explain my jokes to the interrogator. And under the military, I had my show canceled twice, and I eventually had to escape from Egypt and go to live in the United States. So it was a very short-lived dream that was abruptly cut.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Arab Spring now? It seems to me to be obviously a tragic interlude in a way, and the things are worse in Egypt now than they were even under Mubarak. And also it's about the Western, it's about the evil interference of the West.
Well, yes, it is not as good as we hoped for, but looking through history, 90% of revolutions fail, and only 10% of revolution that might actually work, it works after a very long time. So if you want to talk from the political aspect, yes, I think the whatever we hoped for in the Arab Spring did not work, but at the same time, as much as it is disappointing to have that kind of failure, it has opened the minds and of a lot of young people in Egypt. I think now there is, I always say the revolution is not an event, a revolution is a process. And you might find the seeds that this revolution have planted to flourish maybe in the next generation. Maybe we, the people who witnessed the revolution, might not actually see anything or benefit from it, but at the end of the day, you might find that the following generations can actually be the result of that kind of freedom that we have, because it allowed people to talk about stuff that was not even allowed to talk about, where there is like religion, tradition, politics. So again, it's a process. Now, about the evil interference with the West, it's very easy to, of course, to blame the West for everything, but we carry part of that responsibility too. For example, you can blame America all you want about invading Iraq, which is of course evil, but we have to remember that it was also a dictator who invaded another country who oppressed his own people, making it easy paved the way for America to for the West to come in, the West to also prop that same dictator. I think the relationship between the West and the Middle East and many of the third world countries is as, of course we want democracy, but as long as you buy weapons from us, you can do whatever you want, and that is kind of like the relationship that has always been gone between that. So you find like a president, any president who comes to power. And the West, is all about like freedom and freedom of expression. And once you start buying their weapons, there's a blind eye for whatever he wants to do with his people.
Absolutely, yeah. Did you have any live experience between kind of going from heart surgeon to TV satirist? Or was it just through watching like Jon Stewart and stuff on there?
No, I never had any kind of live experience. I never performed. I never did actually do comedy before. My first ever time to do comedy was in front of television cameras. And it was a bumpy road. It was more of a trial and error. I learned on the job. So when I look to my earliest work, I said, like, oh my God, that was terrible. But I think because there was nothing, it was accepted by the public, and I was allowed to kind of in on the job and be better, you know.
It helps if there's nobody came before you, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. It's like no, there's no reference. Like, oh, it's great. And I was like, no, guys, that's terrible, but you don't know.
That was certainly my technique in the early part of my career. So was Western comedy at all popular in Egypt?
Yes. It really depends on what kind of education you have in Egypt. If you went to an English language school or a Western school in Egypt, which is, I would say, a very small percentage of the public would go, you would follow Seinfeld, you would follow Frasier, you would follow Friends, you would follow Eddie Murphy. And you have to understand, like, in the, growing up in the 80s and the 90s, there was no internet. So these kind of, like, things that trickled to us. I was a big fan of the NBA, the National Basketball Association, and Michael Jordan. And we didn't get the game, so we would wait for videotapes to come from America to watch the NBA. Same thing with Friends, you know. All of the illegal downloads to get Friends. Or I remember, like, 2005, when the whole thing, we're watching that TV show, Lost. And we had to kind of wait till the legal download to come. Now with the streaming, with the satellite, it's different. But like we are the generation of the dial-up internet. So at the time, we had to kind of like work hard to get our material to the West.
Yeah, the kids today, they don't know they're born, do they? With their Netflix.
With their Netflix.
Yeah, bastards. was there any British, as the former imperial power, was there any British stuff that you liked?
In entertainment, we didn't have that much of an British. It was more American, all the way from the Muppet Show to Friends to Seinfeld. We had some British comedy show playing, like, for example, Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister. And Upstairs, Downstairs. These are like the British shows that were popular. You have to understand, like, at that time, we only had government television. We didn't have that much of satellite. So it was whatever the government sees fit for us to watch. So whether it was America, we'd watch Magnum and Stargate and MacGyver. And from England, we'd watch Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister, which is like one of my absolute favorite shows.
And Mr. Bean, surely you got Mr. Bean.
Oh yeah,
everybody gets Mr. Bean, not Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean, because there was no dialogue. There's like a guy just doing faces, so you have to understand English.
Yeah, Mr. Fucking Bean.
That's the episode title there.
Mr. Fucking Bean.
What kind of material would you do then, if now or in the early days, really? I mean, what's the
if you're talking about, like, at the early days, was basically what I did was a current political satire show, like The Daily Show in by Jon Stewart. Basically, whatever happens in the country, we would talk about it and we discuss it. Of course, after I left Egypt and I went to America, that I went to a saturated market, and I had absolutely no way to penetrate the market in television, because, you know, you might be the biggest thing in Egypt and the Middle East, but you're an absolute no one in America. So I had to reinvent myself in a way that I do stand-up comedy, which I never did before, in English, which I never did before. And now my stand-up comedy show, which I tour around in the United States, and the one I'm touring right now in Europe, is basically my story. It's a story about, like, a heart surgeon growing up in Egypt, having to do medicine because his parents wanted him to do it. And then the Arab Spring happens. He turned into a political satire. I talk about the investigation, about the pressure doing the show. And then I talk about, like, leaving Egypt, going to America as Trump becoming president. And what does that mean for a newly immigrant person like a new immigrant like me going to America. And there's basically the show is my story. Every single it's not a joke based show. It is a story based show. Each it's like many scenes from my life stitched together to draw the story of my life from America, from Egypt all the way to America, and what does it mean today for me trying to follow other people's expectations that has always been put for me. And in the show, put this way, is a way that a lot of people can relate to the show. In America, not just Middle Eastern come to my show, Americans, immigrants, white Americans, black Americans, Asian Americans, they come and they find themselves in the show somehow. It is a show that actually gets people, you will find yourself into that story, even if my story is completely different than yours.
Right. One of the things I've been what do you think is the effect or the, I mean, it's an impossible question to answer in a way, but what do you think is the effect of satire, of satirical comedy? Does it ultimately just make make it easier for people to put up with their oppression, or does it, do you think it has a kind of a revolutionary effect, right?
Well, the
big question, perhaps.
Comedy and satire, especially political satire, allows people to discuss dull ideas in a way that is funny, that is attractive. You can talk about things that are related to military budget or international imperial interference in people's lives, and you can talk about it in a serious way, but people will fall asleep or not going to be interested. Or you can use satire to bring that topic to them to open a discussion.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
But the other big thing about satire, especially political satire, especially in countries where there is more of an authoritarian mood of governance, is that it is very dangerous for authoritarian leaders, because authoritarian leaders only use fear. And if they want you to make you afraid of them, they want you to make worry about your safety. When you take that and you make fun of it, I always say you cannot be afraid of something that you're laughing at. If you're laughing at something, you're not scared of it anymore. And this is why authoritarian leaders are very sensitive to satire. They're very aggressive. Even now in America, which there is an established democracy in America, the art of political satire is established. Even then, Donald Trump, because he is from that mindset, authoritarian mindset, although he's still in a democratic system, he boycotted the White House correspondent dinner. The only president in the history of America who boycott the White House correspondent dinner, which is an annual event where a comedian comes up and he rips the president apart and he makes fun of them right there as he's sitting. And then the president comes up and he makes fun of himself and the others. And it's a more of a, like a celebration of freedom of speech, even if that was a facade, but it is a symbolic gesture. Donald Trump is the only president in the history of America who boycotted the 4 years of his presidency, and he never went there. Even Ronald Reagan, when he was shot, he called in from the hospital because he knew how, I mean, you talk about whatever you want about like George W. Bush or Reagan or all of the other Republicans, but they kept that kind of tradition because it's important, even if it was a show, to show people that you can still talk up and you can still speak and you can still make fun. So this is why, like when Hitler came, his first target was the caricaturist, his first target was the satirist. Always the comedians are the ones who always get picked up on in the beginning because they are the king gesture. They are the people who make fun. They are basically the people that show you the king naked. And this is very dangerous for the authoritarian leaders because it doesn't serve their agenda of making people live in constant fear.
Oh, thank you. It's amazing. Yes, we had our own Jeremy Corbyn spring here. I don't know if you followed any of that really a few years ago.
Jeremy Corbyn?
Yeah, no, you didn't. There was a so about in 20 when was it 2015 2016 through an accident, this guy got elected to the leadership of the Labour Party, the other major party, in the sort of equivalent more or less of the Democrats in and he was pro-Palestinian, anti-colonial, anti-capitalist, but still nevertheless a Democrat. And that really shook up the establishment in Britain. And he proved himself to be a tremendous threat. But comedians, I think comedians really let the side down, really, because they allowed themselves to be intimidated, really, and didn't, apart from me, didn't really back him. And they allowed themselves to be, I guess, subversive. I mean, do they? So I don't know what point I'm.
It's just embarrassing because the stakes are so, like what Bassem did in Egypt. The stakes were so high, and yet you continued to do your thing, even with the threat of arrest, with the death threats, with all this stuff. You didn't cower from what you were doing.
Well, I did it until I couldn't, you know. As a matter of fact, it's funny that you say that. Like, for you, for Westerns, people look at me as like, oh my God, you're brave, look at what you did. For many Egyptians, they think I'm a coward and I'm a sellout, that I did, because I left and I didn't allow myself to be put in jail, which is another point that I want to speak about, which is having to put too much pressure on comedians. Comedians are not saints, or comedians are not heroes. Comedians are not political activists. They can use their comedy in order to push their opinions, of course. But if it is too dangerous, you should not be hurt for other people's problems. Because this is the, I know that a lot of people, I know that I might have a pushback. The whole idea about putting comedians on a pedestal, and the reason that happens is that comedians come and make fun in an environment where everything is dysfunctional. Media is dysfunctional, politics is dysfunctional. So people look at comedians and they're like, they are the only people who can do their job well. They make fun of the establishment, they're good at what they do, and then suddenly they gravitate to them, and then they just like put too much hope on them. And that is very dangerous, because seriously, like, my role as a comedian stops at the edge of the screen, or the stops or at the edge of the theater. I should not go to jail so people can feel good about themselves. And this is, I think, that like a big thing about like how is like comedy and activism can interact. Yes, of course. At the end of the day, I'm a citizen. I'm a human being. I want my country, or the, whatever country that I live in, is better. So I use comedy to criticize. But at the same time, I should not be criticized or penalized because I could not continue doing it because there's threat for me or my family. And I think that is the thing about like there's a lot of like couch warmers, bench warmers who sit around and just want stuff happen to themselves. And the other negative part of comedy and satire, because there is a negative part, a lot of people watch satirists and comedians rip apart the people that they don't like, and they feel that they have done their job. Then they just do nothing. So a lot of people just watch the comedy and the satire and the making fun of things. And then when it happens, when it's time to elections, they don't go vote. Donald Trump was elected, and there's like a million women march in the streets of Los Angeles, and people like went out, they went there for the Instagram opportunities and the pictures and the funny little smart banners that they did. And then the next week there were local elections. Only 12% showed up. You see? So I think it is very important to be mindful about to decide the role of comedy. Comedy is important. Satire is important, but it cannot do everything. As well, I mean, there's like a very famous saying that says, prayers don't change things. Prayers change people and people change things. Same with comedy, right? So at the end of the day, you do your role, but you cannot really be responsible about changing everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic point. I think that that's you've articulated so many things that I vaguely
felt. And shame on anyone who called you a chicken for not wanting to go to jail. That's ridiculous. And You know, like,
for many people, for the ultra revolutionists, for many Islamists, I'm the guy who bailed out and left Egypt. It's like, because you're away. It's like, and you know, don't speak about things in Egypt because I'm in America. Yes, because I'm in America, and now I am in a different country, and my comedy reflects my life there. It's that they just want people to go in and do their job for them, and they just want to like, I from the very beginning I said I'm a comedian, I'm a political satirist, I love what I do, but I'm not going to be involved in politics. And I had like so many offers to be in political parties, like I said, I'm a comedian. Do this because I love it. And if you guys have a beef, I am not someone who is going there to fight with the intelligence apparatus and the government so you can feel good about yourself.
Yeah. I think it's very, I think it's so important that what our job is to make comedy, is to make art out of, you know, the things that we see. But we should never become activists. We should never become, academics. We should never write books about.
We're not freedom fighters. I know that is very, like, over-romanticizing of comedians is very dangerous.
Yeah, and some of it in a way are. I mean, it, part of the message of what we're saying is the kind of ambiguous nature of who we are, that we're not heroes. That's an important part of my comedy, certainly, is to always emphasize that I'm very flawed, really.
But what I think what we were getting at is that the comedians here didn't even have any threat of danger. It was more they were protecting their careers or their commercial interest by not supporting socialist or not vocalizing support for Palestine is a big issue here. Like, a lot of people who, you know, it's so rare that someone will vocalize their support for Palestine, even though you know that they, behind closed doors, they do, because they know that there's a commercial.
Yeah, people are afraid. Well, here's the thing. People are afraid because, like, they are afraid of their career and their livelihood will be affected. And I understand that. But the thing is, here's what I think. I would rather that you do not speak about stuff that might hurt your career, but at least they are not doing something that does not align with their beliefs. So let's say, for example, like, I am supporting Palestine in England. I'm an English comedian, but I'm afraid to speak up. I understand that. But what I will have a problem with, if you go and you do the complete opposite in order to get gains. I understand that you don't want to speak up because you don't want to lose. But the problem is what you say in order to gain something, especially if what you say does not align with your beliefs. I think that you need to make that kind of distinction. Because I think, like, the older I get, you get, the more that you understand more about people's circumstances. And you cannot just, like, ask two people to do stuff. Everybody has their own issue. Everybody has their own lives. And I think it's... the whole idea about, like, virtue signaling and just, like, trying to put yourself in a higher moral level than other people and thinking that you are better because you say something while others don't, you know, all of us have limitations. All of us have issues. And I just focus about, like, my own beliefs, and I don't kind of, like, try to up other people and to show I feel better about myself.
No, that's not my approach at all.
No, I was talking about myself.
I take a very high.
I was waiting for that.
No, that's not me. That's not. Moral superiority is all I have left.
That's Alexi's brand.
Yeah, that's haughty disdain. Talal, would you like to ask if you have any questions of Bassam?
Are you up for talking about this this film that you're going to be making as you travel, or is that going to be top secret?
Oh, yeah. So I'm actually using the opportunity of this trip, this Euro trip, I have teamed up with a wonderful filmmaking crew from Paris. They're Egyptians, Egyptian French. And basically what I'm trying to do is, instead of just like going to each city and just do my show, I said, like, I have an opportunity here to discover these communities. So we started looking for Arab comedians who are living in these European countries. And I want to know more about the Arab diaspora, the Arab immigrant community, the Arab, there is like a whole lost generation of young Arabs after the Arab Spring who went to Europe either because of immigration, because of displacement, because of being a refugee. And there is a lot that is related to identity, racism, acceptance, not just acceptance by the European community they're living in, but also acceptance by the Arab community they come from. And I thought, like, who are the best people to talk to as a window to look at the community as other than the comedians? So we have lined up amazing talents, Arab comedians in every single city, and we are going to discover the Arab diaspora through the eyes of these comedians. So we have people in Oslo, in Stockholm, in Amsterdam, in Berlin, people from Iraqis, Yemenis, Syrian, Egyptians, Sudanese, who have been either born as sons and daughters of immigrants or came here as immigrants. We have someone who walked from Greece all the way to Oslo. We have someone who have been who crossed the sea in a refugee boat from Syria, and now they are here doing comedy, which for me is mind blowing. For them now, comedy is therapy. They are actually talking about their experience through comedy. And they are talking about, and they are having problems, not just with the community they are settling in, but also the communities that they are belong to. Many of them are not even accepted by their Arab communities. They think their comedy is too much, is subversive, is not, it is not appropriate. It does not align with the tradition and religion where they come from. So for me, I think shooting this docu-series is going to be it's kind of like Anthony Bourdain, but for comedians, for Arab comedians. And I think...
presumably, hopefully you're not going to kill yourself in a hotel room.
Well, you know, comedians are very known to be depressed and suicidal. So,
fucking hell.
So, yeah, so I'm very excited about discovering more about this community through the eyes of comedian. I'm very, very, very excited and thrilled for this beginning this journey.
Sounds amazing. I mean, I want to see, is it going to be on major platform?
We don't know. I'm self-financing that show. I'm producing it from my, I'm self-financing it. And hopefully after I finish that, we will find a platform to do it. I just got so excited. And I said, like, I decided I'm not going to wait for it to be greenlit from a platform. I'm going to self-finance it and do it. And then hopefully we'll find a home for it somewhere.
It sounds amazing. It sounds absolutely fantastic. I mean, will they be talking in English or in Arabic or a mixture of the two?
Mostly it's going to be in Arabic. I'm sorry. But hopefully we're going to do another. But you know, right. They could be dubbed. It could be subtitled. So we will find a way to either dub it or subtitle so it can reach as many people as possible.
Even English films these days, I want to watch them with subtitles because, you know. So, I'm so pretentious that
I can't hear their dialogue anymore.
Well, that's also true, yeah, but you know, I have to, everything has to be subtitled for me.
Hello all you gorgeous Taspers. TASP being short for the Alexi Sale Podcast. Taspers being listeners who enjoy the Alexi Podcast. Is that a good nickname? Anyway, thank you for, and I hope you're enjoying, listening to this conversation with Basim Youssef. I'm just popping in here to remind you to support the show. If you can, head over to patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast. Over there, you can sign up for any monthly donation and you'll be supporting the show. Keeping me in work
and you'll get access to some cool exclusive stuff like recordings of our live shows. You'll get to watch Alexi Sale, Nigel Planer and Lisa Mayer watching The Young Ones and commenting on it. And I'm putting out more of those very soon. And we'll also have some more surprises on the way there. So please, if you can afford to, you can literally donate a quid a month and you'll get on the list. Go to patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast. And another way you can support us is by coming to watch me support Bassem Youssef on his UK leg of his tour. I'm so excited and proud that he's asked me to do that. 9th of March in the South Bank Centre in London. In Birmingham on the 10th of March at the Rep. And then in Manchester on the 11th of March at the O2 Ritz in Manchester. Come along. Let me know you're coming if you tweet me or Instagram me at Talalaban. And I'll make sure to try and come and say hi or something. Okay, thank you. Let's get back to it. Enjoy the rest of the show. Love you.
I mean, I think that you've given me so much to think about, you know, in terms of my own. I guess you've thought a lot about what it is to be a comedian, really. I mean, you've articulated a lot of things that I've felt, but never really managed to bring to the front of my brain. You just evolved these ideas, or is it part? Was it? I don't know. Is it being a surgeon? What? Why do you know so much? Why are you so clever?
Yeah, because I'm a nerd. I'm a nerd.
Is that what it is? I think we've really.
Well, did we want to touch on Palestine a bit? Because two episodes, we were on a bit of a streak. I don't know if you want to talk about it, but the last two episodes, we spoke about, we've done Palestine-focused episodes. So maybe this is a way of transitioning out of it, because we had a non-Arab Muslim who went to Palestine. Then we had a Jewish South African who spent a lot of time in Palestine on the other episode. And now we're talking to an Arab, but we've pretty much avoided talking about Palestine with the first Arab we've had on the show.
As a matter of fact, my wife is half Palestinian. Her father is from Gaza. And so, you know, you can get more Palestinian than this, you know. But the thing is, you have to be very careful about how you use Palestine as a political discussion point. Because I'm telling you, no one can speak about Palestine like Palestinians themselves. And there is so many Palestinians who live inside Israel, who live in the occupied territory in Gaza and the West Bank. And they have a different, and the people outside are they are more royal than the king, right? And how do you call it? A more of a witch hunt, that if you don't speak about Palestine in the same exact tone, in the way that we want, you are going to be labeled as anti-Palestinian or pro-Zionist. All right? Which, like, happens to me. Like, it really hurts us as Arabs and people who are pro the Palestinian cause, that we do not make a very, very clear distinction. Because what does it mean to be a Zionist? Or what does it mean to be a Jew? Because there are many liberal Jews who are on our side. But the thing, like John Stewart, for example, John Stewart is someone who came up many times and he talked about like the atrocities of the Israeli forces in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And yet I was accused of being anti-Palestinian, pro-Israeli, because I was on his show because he's a Jew. We as Arabs, we are not educated enough, many of us, are not educating us to talk about this, and we end up at the end of the day being hateful because we do not. There is a big distinction about your political view and about your religion, about where you come from, right? There's people who are Arab Israelis, like Arabs who live in Israel, who do not want to be a part of this. They want to live their life, and they don't want to be like pulled into the political discussion.
Right.
And instead of winning them over, we are shooting them away. So the whole this whole, and I think this is like a big, like a smaller part of a bigger issue, which is all or none. It's like the George W. Bush thing. If you're not with me, you're against me. There are people who just don't want to be part of it, all right? And you do not need to alienate those people too. There is a way to talk about Palestine that is beneficial for the Palestinian people. But when you go in with hate, with anti-Jewish, anti-anything that does not work, talk exactly like you, it is counterproductive for your cause. It is very dangerous.
I think we have a more nuanced way of talking about it on this show. And Alexei is one of the liberal Jews that you mentioned.
I'm one of those liberal Jews.
But
no, it's a fair point. I mean, I think
absolutely.
I
hate it when people push their hate onto me just, and they assume I will jump in on it because I'm Arab. They assume I will enjoy their anti-Semitic jokes or whatever. It's like, I don't want anything to put hate in my heart. I love and support Palestine. Absolutely. That doesn't mean I hate anything. They don't have to go hand in hand.
Yeah. And for example, like if I'm someone who lives there is ways to talk about, especially that we have to admit that we are late in the game. Arabs are late in the game. We are late in the media game. We are late in the political game. We are late in that kind of game. So they have already, the Israeli point of view has already been established and popularized in the West for more than us. So there is in the smart way, an intelligent way in order to come in. So for example, if I'm in America and I want to talk about the Palestinian issue, I will not talk about Israeli, Palestinian, and the bombs and whatever. I will just talk. I was like, you know, I would love to talk about the Palestinian issue if I am allowed to talk about it. Because as an American, I'm an American citizen. I can talk shit about the American president. I can say the most horrible things about the American president. But if I talk about the Israeli government, I will be labeled as anti-Semitic. If I talked about the Israeli prime minister, I would be labeled as him. If I question the kind of aid that America gives, and I'm a taxpayer, I'm an American taxpayer, that where my taxes is going to Israel and other countries, even in the Middle East, who take a lot of aid money from America and then abuse it, whether they, with Israel, would it abuse the Palestinian or other Arab countries who abuse their own citizens. If I talk about that from about Israel, I'll be talking about anti-Semitic. So there's a way to talk about things by showing people what you cannot talk about.
All right, okay.
And then that will pay me people to ask questions.
Yeah, that's a very novel, different approach. Wow. You've just flown in from Los Angeles and you're in your hotel room in Paris. You're gonna go. I'm just wary of keeping you. We'll let you go in a minute, really. You're gonna like try and stay up, or are you just gonna crash now? Well, you gotta go and go to the Louvre.
Well, I'll try to stay up to beat my jet lag. You need to beat the jet lag. So if you sleep now, I'm not gonna be asleep. So I'm just gonna try to like drink coffee and be up.
What are you looking forward to doing in Paris?
Well, tomorrow we're gonna have the first batch of interviews with the Arab comedians. So this is gonna be something I'm very, very looking forward to. Mm. And after tomorrow is my show. Of course, I look up. That's gonna be the beginning of the tour. So hopefully we're not gonna jinx it. So I'm very excited. I'm excited to come to London next week. So promote the show, guys.
Yeah.
We're only 40%.
Absolutely.
We are kind of like, I think 40% sold, but like there is still like 10 days. So tell your friends.
We will.
Yeah, let's promote this shit. Here we go. Fucking promote this shit. Once again, Thursday the 9th of March in the South Bank Center. Bassem Youssef and with myself and Omar Badawi, my favorite UK Arab comic. He's one of the funniest,
mother crushers I've seen out there. Arab or not, he's just so funny. And that's the whole point as well. Like, why should our race define us as artists? But still, Omar Bedoui and myself opening for Bassem Youssef on Thursday the 9th at the South Bank Centre in London. And then the next day, the 10th, is what I have in the diary, is Birmingham at the Old Rep. With and then after that, on the 11th, Bassem is in Manchester. I can't remember which.
Where are you playing in Manchester now?
It's the O2 Ritz. The O2 Ritz.
Alexi, I have something to tell you.
Yes.
So on the 7th, when the day that I arrive in London, I am doing a promotional interview on a TV show. Guess who I am going to be on his show?
Oh, Michael McIntyre? No.
Piers Morgan.
Oh,
fuck.
Kasumak.
Fuck. Yeah. No way.
That's going to be an interesting show.
Yeah.
It will be interesting because you will have a debate. You'll properly lay into each other. And I suppose that's what TV is for, isn't it? To make it something interesting, not just two people who agree with each other.
I don't care as long as we sell tickets. I don't care if I am with the devil on his show.
Well, somebody told me once that just laugh at his jokes, find him amusing, and then he will be really nice to you. That is what I have been told.
Yeah, fuck that.
Can go into a fight, make that segment go viral, and it will even be better.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one.
Oh, you could take him. I mean, you could fucking, he's flabby and fucking, you know, degenerate, really. You could fucking have him, man.
You're Arab, he's probably going to try and talk to you about the refugees swarming our country and swarming the beaches and shit. He's going to try and hold you accountable for our land being overtaken by refugees. So, I actually look forward to seeing what comes of that.
Yeah, he's not an idiot. He's I mean, he's sort of venal and, you know, coming to the end of his usefulness, I think. But he'll probably bounce. He'll probably be all right, I would think, really.
All right. We're going to put this out as quick as possible so that people can hear it before the show.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay?
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And hopefully see you on the 9th at the festival.
Yes, I would love it. It would be amazing to have you, Alexi. Please. Yeah. And tell your friends, Alexi. Tell your white people. Your white friends to come to the show. I can't just have Arabs in the theater. Come on.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
I will.
Thank you.
I don't have many friends, but.
Yes, you do, Alexi. Come on. Don't get depressing at the end of the episode. Bring some energy when we say goodbye. Come on.
I'm so ill.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Okay, bye, everyone. Bye, Bassem. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much,
guys, for having me. See you.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Alexi Sell Podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.